The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and underwriting our podcast for well over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the November 2021 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month is Pie Towns, and we started the pictorial last month, and it was so long we never actually finished. It was entitled The Sweetest Slices, and they had four more, and they all sounded so delicious that I thought I'd finish up and then move on to some articles about pies, but we'll talk about where to get them first. We're going to continue now with a pictorial, coconut custard, one of my absolute favorites. Maxie B's in Greensboro is the place for the coconut lovers out there. Maxie B's in Greensboro offers both a coconut custard pie and a coconut cream pie, along with a brownie-esque chocolate chess pie and several others. Customers from around Guilford County and beyond have long flocked to the bakery for its decadent cakes. Don't you love that word, decadent? In 2017, owner Robin Davis expanded the menu to include pie. As with cake, Davis was motivated by her own cravings for authentic Southern classic recipes. Maxie B's customers love pie as much as she does, Davis says, and each recipe has developed a devoted following. And you know what? That appears to be the last one. I'm going to have to go from back to end. I was reading the last one first, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, we'll go backwards now. Buttermilk pies. Bean Traders in Durham. Open since 2000, Bean Traders Coffee Roasters in Durham started offering pie in late 2015 after co-owner Christy Chapman decided to teach herself how to bake pies she was proud of and spent a year perfecting an all-butter crust recipe. In 2018, Chapman trained baker Andrea McGeary, who now makes about 50 pies per week and up to 100 around Thanksgiving, including a fantastic buttermilk pie. I do pie for the people, McGeary says. Every day I can come in here and it will remind me of my Nana, who was a baker. It's just really satisfying. For Thanksgiving, Chapman and McGeary plan to offer pumpkin, apple, vanilla buttermilk, pecan, and chocolate truffle pies. Pie is special for so many reasons, and sharing is one of them, Chapman says, echoing McGeary's sentiment. People buy pie for their people. There on West North Carolina Highway 54 in Durham, BeanTradersCoffee.com. Boy, there's a wonderful picture here, close-up picture of a piece of pie with a big dollop of whipped cream on top, and between the whipped cream and the pie is powdered sugar. And the caption reads, "Coffee's best companion. It took more than a decade for Bean Traders to add pie to its menu, but now locals know that the coffee shop offers some of the best desserts in town. Among the rotating flavors, vanilla buttermilk is a forever favorite." How about chocolate chess at Cutie Pies? That's a nice pun. In Raleigh, Thomas Milloway, owner and baker at Cutie Pies of Raleigh, baked several kinds of chess pie, chocolate, pecan, and rum coconut chocolate. Chocolate goes good with everything, he says. He likes to experiment with his pie recipes. When it comes to fall offerings like sweet potato and pumpkin, Milloway roasts the pumpkin and sweet potatoes with herbs to deepen their flavors. If you visit the bakery checked out in red, white, and black, it's down the street from North Carolina State University, you might be greeted with a free sample bowl. Sometimes he hands out baked scraps of pie crust dough sprinkled with cinnamon and sugar. Others, a treat his mum used to make called Hello Dolly, a graham cracker crust filled with chocolate chips and coconut. Okay, they are at 1213 Hillsborough Street in Raleigh. Cutie Pies of Raleigh. .com. And lastly, Pumpkin Carolina Pie Company in Mooresville. Steve Lindberg, who owns Carolina Pie Company with his wife Barb, agrees that there's just something about pie. Everyone comes in with a smile. Everyone leaves with a smile, he says. Even with 40 varieties of pie on the menu, including four different kinds of apple pie, Pumpkin is the most popular flavor at this Iredell County bakery. In addition to the traditional version, the Lindbergs and their daughter Melanie Barker make a pumpkin cream pie featuring a ginger snap crust and brown sugar whipped cream topping. They're on Stutz Road in Mooresville, carolinapie.com. I didn't mention, I don't think, that Maxie B's in Greensboro was on Battleground Avenue, and they have a website, maxieb.com. And now, the first full article, Warm Homies, Happy Hearts. Both are charming. Both have Southern hospitality to spare. But when it comes right down to it, what's the best way to unwind in North Carolina? Keeping cozy in a cabin or kicking back in a cottage. Two writers tell all, and those writers would be Drew Perry and Susan Stafford Kelly. The Case for Cabins by Drew Kelly. Drew Perry. I mixed the names up. Drew Perry. After a cool weather hike, there's no place this writer would rather be than parked in front of the fireplace inside a cabin. Log style, please. In Cashiers, he found the hearth of his dreams. I do not require actual notched and stacked logs, though I will, of course, accept and even encourage them. Dovetailed corner joints, after all, look like $1 million from the gravel driveway. I need a gravel driveway. Asphalt or concrete driveways aren't deal breakers, but they're friendlier on the minivan, even. But if we don't have the sound of gravel under the tires and we don't have logs, well, then we're off on the wrong foot, or feet, aren't we? I'm not big on the pillows, / painted boards, / framed prints that say relax, or cabin time, or everything's blank in the mountains. That feels more like a cabin knockoff of a beach house vibe. I will accept a deer crossing sign hanging on the downstairs bathroom door, so long as we understand that we're headed toward a certain brand of comedy there, one that's difficult to maintain throughout. I love an exposed beam. I want a loft. I require a porch or deck of some sort, and I treat almost as catechism that it needs to overlook something. A cabin is much about the outdoor space as the indoor. One does not, even in the most inclement weather, drink one's cabin coffee inside, at least not the first cup. Perhaps this is the first great departure in the matter of cabin versus cottage. I bet cottagers drink coffee in a breakfast nook. I'll bet there's a small round table with a vase of wild flowers and great morning light. This is all well and good. For me and my kind, though, I want sleet and a hat and a chipped mug from a half-broken cabinet. And I want to look down a hill, and I want there to be fog. Bonus points for metal roof. Bonus points for part of the porch or deck being covered. See sleet. The flatware better not match. The wine opener needs to be broken, thus requiring ingenuity. I want big, heavy throw blankets on the sofas, plus a recliner that you would never, under any circumstances, have in your own house. Wood floors are a must. It's nice if I never totally understand the floor plan. My kids prefer bunk beds. Here's the second great departure. A cottage feels like screen doors and windows. A cottage feels like a porch ceiling painted sky blue. Those things are nice in a cabin, but well down the list. Thing one on the cabin list? A fireplace. A proper wood-burning fireplace. Or a giant wood stove. A cottage can survive without a fireplace. A cabin can't. A stone fireplace in Trap Hill was magnificent. And the ancient Potbelly in Helton was an actual monument to efficiency. But nothing, not one fireplace in the state, can touch the yawning brick hearth in the cabin we rented down U.S. Highway 64 from cashiers. We rented it for the fireplace. In fact, which almost on its own, made up for the carpets in the back bedrooms, the two low ceilings, the weird half kitchen, got up, lit a fire. Came back from hiking, lit a fire. Home in the evenings, lit a big fire, banking the coals before bedtime. I can imagine water at a cottage, but when I do, it's more of a pond-type situation. This cabin had a creek running alongside it, one you could hear from the porch, a porch that, in a stroke of absolute genius, opened onto a deck. Though it was frigid when we were there, the boys pulled on galoshes morning and evening to go hiking in the creek. I'd wander out on the porch deck, lean over the railing, call down to them, "Y'all aren't cold?" My big one would call back up, "You have the fire going, right?" I did. We always did. The last night we were there, we made use of the outdoor fireplace, too, a fireplace that shared a chimney with the indoor fireplace. We grilled burgers and chicken and drank hot chocolate next to the bonfire we lit in the fire ring. Any self-respecting cabin needs an outdoor fire pit, too. And there, under the trees and stars, at least one of us wondered about these stolen cabin nights and weekends. Wondered if the cottage folks had it quite so good. And they do. The cottage folks, they have it just fine. They're playing card games while a breeze ruffles the linen curtains. I can see them with ice in a mason jar, matching white plates. Up here in the woods, though, we cabin people are jiggling the range knob just so, the way you have to do so, the thing will come on. We might have soup going. We'll step out to the porch with a beverage and a state park mug. We'll check to make sure the boys aren't getting frostbite down in the creek. After a while, though, we'll need to go back inside. That fire is not going to tend itself. And then we have Susan Stafford Kelly calling all cottage fans. At a cottage, the living's easy and mostly outdoors. Three seasons out of the year, you'll find this writer at her family's nearly century-old abode on Lake Waccamaw, preferably on the porch. We're comparing here, not competing. This isn't a versus. It's a preference. It's apples and oranges, not a contest. Still casting my vote for a cottage. Immediate plus point. A cottage, unlike a cabin, is nearly always on water. Mine's on Lake Waccamaw, with a wide view of wide water and a 5 mile across, a 3-inch line of treed horizon. I love a seaside shingled cottage, but old lake cottages, and this one is 90, are clabbered. Clabbered outside, clabbered inside. No insulation, no paneling, no closets for that matter, at least in the bedrooms where nails hammered into the same clabbered suffice for shorts and t-shirt storage because in a cottage, necessity is the mother of invention. Two of the five bedrooms stretch from front to back with room for multiple beds, and they're basically dormitories. Girls upstairs, boys downstairs. Concede cozy to a cabin. A cottage has no room, literally, for intimacy. After all, you're sharing a bathroom under the slanted roof line with nine others who also line their toothbrushes on a wall stud and duck their heads beneath a naked light bulb to brush their teeth. The bathtub is outside. It's called a lake. Here's a gimme win for a cabin. Cottages are three-season places. You can manage a Thanksgiving spread, but there's not much appeal to a cottage in January. cottages do not have fireplaces. They have porches. People in cabins live inside. People in cottages live on porches. They eat on porches and play games on porches and doze in rockers on porches. Not those Adirondack numbers at cabins that you can barely haul yourself out of without a crane. And watch lizards climb on bowed-out screens on porches. Cottage people only go back inside for something else to drink or eat. From a kitchen where the stove stands alone, unattached to a counter. A screen door is always slamming somewhere in a cottage because someone's going back outside. I give high marks to intentional inelegance, which abounds in cottages. Most of the decor is impervious to being ruined because it already is. Everything needs to be reupholstered or recovered, and no one minds enough to do it. There's homemade artwork tacked to the walls, someone's imperfect rendering of a sunset, maybe a deflated balloon from a past birthday celebration. There's a jar of screws and loose change next to an arrowhead and a hawk feather and a stack of curling our states. There's expired sunblock and insect repellent and a basket on the floor and a can of Crisco, which never seems to expire, in a kitchen cabinet. And a pile of deflated rafts in the tool shed that no one quite has the energy to blow up and see if they still float. There's always a wet towel slung somewhere. There might be geraniums or basil in a pot on a stoop that no one really remembers to water. Cottages may be careworn and have a whiff of the tacky about them. But that very trait also makes them carefree. You can clean a cottage with a leaf blower. Oh, and there's a hammock. Hammocks never need reupholstering. Don't forget that cottages have a concrete pad beneath or beside them with a basketball goal and kickstanded bikes and a charcoal grill awaiting the next meal. Hard to bounce a ball or ride a bike on a forest floor. And grills in a forest? Dicey, if not downright illegal. Three more checks for cottage column. Cabins seem to recoil from civilization and request privacy. But heck, a cottage is usually so close to its neighbor that you can see what they're doing on their porch or dock or driveway. And without the pickups pulling boats and the occasional motorcycle blat-blatting by, there'd be nothing to talk about. You can imagine a hermit living peacefully alone, whittling, writing a memoir, tying flies in a cabin, but without multiple people in them. Cottages have no personality. They're shells. A cottage is open and guileless, boisterous and rambunctious. Cabins crouch next to streams or huddle under trees, but cottages sprawl, and not because of the interior layout. Everyone's outside. But because people are sprawled out all over them in various states of undress and non-achieving activities. Nobody's chopping wood or clearing the back 40 at a cottage. Gateway or vacay stay? Cabins and cottages luckily fall into both categories. You could probably live permanently in a cabin, but in a cottage, nah. Which is why it's such a joy to return to. You get a new lease on life, but with the same old matchbook balancing the card table. Finally, few splinters when the wall aren't hand-hewn. As I said, this isn't a contest. It's no contest whatsoever. That was Susan Stafford Kelly versus Drew Perry. Well, I don't know how far we're going to get in this one, but we'll take a shot at Storybook Stays. A couple has transformed Brightwaters, a former resort tucked among the hardwoods of Henderson County, into a compound of cozy cabins where vacationers are writing a fresh chapter on Blue Ridge getaways. Once upon a time, and by the way, this is written by Susan Stafford Kelly again. Once upon a time, at resorts of yesteryear, guests didn't expect yoga classes or paddleboard lessons and hot stone massages. Lawn bowling, card playing, and fishing were entertainment aplenty when the real carrot was escaping the tropical heat back home in Florida. Samuel J. Childs knew this fact because he'd personally experienced it. A Pennsylvanian who hit it big on oil investments, Childs vacationed in Brightwaters, Florida, near Tampa. In the early 1920s, wending his way back north in the Dixie Highway, he stopped in Hendersonville, liked the look and the feel of the climate, bought a 400-acre farm, and turned 100 acres into a resort named after his favorite vacation spot in Florida. He built 25 cabins and began trolling for, well, for Floridians. The man knew his market. Nights are always cool, even in midsummer. With such a rarity in air, low humidity, and absence of the annoyance of mosquitoes, you'll find the joys of far northern woods. And yet you're only a short distance from your Florida home, reads an earlier Brightwaters brochure. A one-room schoolhouse became a dining hall, and folks who preferred guest rooms to cabins were housed in both a central lodge and a two-story stone building, built in 1938, that features eight bedrooms and six bathrooms. The nature-favored land, Childs described his oasis in North Carolina, and boasted of its lawn bowling court. We believe this to be the first lawn bowling court in America, undercover, and the only marl or clay court north of Florida. 90 years on, Childs might have thought twice about advertising the dining hall, which entertains regulars and transients. But never mind. Horseback riding, tennis, shuffleboard were among the entertainment offerings. Fresh sheets and ice were delivered daily to your door for an extra $5 per stay. And long before table to farm was concept, the farm at Brightwaters provided fresh eggs, produce, and meat to the dining hall and other Hendersonville merchants. Year after year, the guests kept returning just as they do now. But let's not jump the gun. The success in those first decades didn't last. In the early 60s, the resort ceased operation. The dining hall remained open until 1972, when it burned down in a six-alarm fire that Hendersonville old-timers remember well. A builder named G.I. Murphy bought the property, converted the stone hotel into two flat-like apartments, and renovated the original carriage house, a brown building dubbed the Foxhole. Over the next 6 years, Murphy used supplies left over from his construction projects, as well as his workers who needed winter employment, to build four rental cabins. The interior layouts are identical, but the cabins are quirkily different depending on what materials Murphy had on hand, and the popular decor of the day. Hence the distinct Asian influence found in one. The place was sold again, and then, well, leases ended. Renters became squatters. Money grew short. Trees tumbled onto rooftops. Dilapidation descended on Brightwaters. Like Brightwaters' founder, Michelle Azan and Elizabeth Perez did not have Blue Ridge roots, but the transplants were quick to make Hendersonville their home. Azan, a child of Jamaican immigrants, was working for the Wall Street Journal. Perez, who was born in Venezuela, was a tractor-trailer driver. The pair was living in New York City when they visited Hendersonville for a friend's birthday party. Duly smitten with the town, they bought a vacation house there in 2007. A week's vacation became 2 weeks, and then 3 months at a time for 7 years, and then a permanent home. And then the Brightwaters property went up for sale in 2015. By the time Perez had heard the Brightwaters backstory and toured the Foxhole, she was already at the I want it, I want it, I want it point. I know you're not supposed to show any excitement, but I was giving Michelle the eye, saying, "We have to have this," she recalls. The charming, lovely aspect of that decision, though, is that when Azan and Perez bought Brightwaters, they also bought the history at Brightwaters. "We thought it needs to go back to its original history," Azan says, and they set about doing just that. A jack-of-all-trades and a U.S. Army parachute rigger veteran, Perez handled repairs and renovations, discovering nooks where long-term vacationers stored trunks and suitcases in the stonehouse, finding original wood floors and head-high wainscoting beneath carpets and paint, and convincing contractors that they absolutely could work around the original railing of the open-air veranda on the second floor. Perez was thrilled when a local mason identified the stonework as both area river rock and bluestone hauled from Turley Falls right down the road. Azan took on the decorating, attending auctions, and befriending consignment store owners in several states to give, say, the veranda, as the house's second-floor apartment is known, its original Floridian feel, with rattan furniture, bamboo-framed mirrors, mosquito-netted beds, and tropical print textiles. She sought out the original gold foil wallpaper and honored the Asian vibe of the Laurelwood cabin. One cabin is simply called the Bungalow 207, and another is named Mountain Lily after a domed, abandoned riverboat meant to transport folks down the French Broad between Asheville and Brevard. Each cabin has today's vitals as well. Soft linens, fluffy pillows, and that round, domed Hamaker Schlemmer white noise machine. The original is still the best in every bedroom. All the while, the duo was searching for and gathering any scrap of newsprint or oral history they could find about Brightwaters. They talked to local descendants of the Childs and Murphy families and undertook deep dives on the Internet. Their trove of findings include photographs and postcards featuring ladies in hats seated on ladderback chairs at dining room tables. I am here, arrows penned on a picture from the 1940s, guests leaning from the veranda to wave, and patrons on horseback beneath saplings. Today, those towering hardwoods shower autumn leaves on a grassy central clearing. All told, the Brightwaters compound can house 42 people, and boy does it ever. Thanks to that very climate that Samuel Childs once bragged about, Hendersonville is a four-season playground. Adventure lovers lease cabins as a base camp for hiking and mountain biking forays into Pisgah National Forest and DuPont State Recreational Forest minutes away. Shoppers, sippers, and foodies are only 3 miles from the plethora of shops and cafes, galleries, and restaurants along Hendersonville's long, serpentine, pedestrian-friendly Main Street. The cabins are tucked around a cul-de-sac with plenty of privacy, yet are close enough that families can reserve the whole compound for weekend weddings, anniversary celebrations, or Thanksgiving gatherings. One fellow rents a cabin for the entire winter, while someone else rents his Florida home. In autumn, the thin, tall, wild grasses lining the road to Brightwaters bow beneath their heavy, feathery heads, glinting white in fall's clear, slanting sunlight. The longing to be outdoors beneath the yellow leaves, freed by a breeze or on a cabin porch or around a fire pit, is powerful and reason enough for a mountain town sojourn. Brightwaters Vacation Rentals, 202 Tioga Trail in Hendersonville. Their website, brightwatersvacationrentals.com. And that, my friends, is all the time we have for today's episode of our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, and on iTunes. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.